Welcome to Words and Pictures, the show about the narrative arts. I'm your host, S.W. Conser, and my guest today is an Ignatz Award-winning comics artist whose work has appeared in Drawn and Quarterly Showcase, Kramer's Ergot, and the Best American Comics. His comics include Super Monster, Or Else, and Curses, the last two of which made Time Magazine's top 10 list of comics in 2005 and 2006. And the dreamlike adventures of his long-running character, Glenn Ganges, are now available in a sprawling collection of stories called The River at Night. Kevin Heisinger, welcome to Words and Pictures.
Hello, thank you.
Let's talk about the character, Glenn Ganges. To the outside observer, he's something of an everyman, but his inner life can be really colorful, surreal, unpredictable.
You know, people who reviewed the comic, other people have called him an everyman. I don't really think of him that way. But I do intend him to be sort of a vessel that the reader can sort of inhabit, like an avatar, and, you know, try to see the world from inside. In the early issues of Ganges, I drew his head very large on the cover. And part of the idea, though I never really made this explicit, part of the idea was that it was mask-sized. You know, and so you could have theoretically used those covers and maybe cut the eyes out and used them as masks. And that's something I left out of the book. But some of the idea of having him and his wife Wendy's heads so large on the comic book covers was sort of to bookend the comic book with mask-sized versions of their faces. And I thought that that sort of would subliminally, you know, subtly invite the reader to think of them as wearing the mask and seeing what they see.
So wanted to touch a little bit on Glenn Ganges' home life. He has a wife, Wendy, who's a freelance illustrator. He has a day-to-day job where he's pitching clients.
He's like some kind of computer guy, business guy, you know.
Right. But that fades into the background. I mean, his inner life is really the richness of the strip.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to create something in the story that sort of feels like the natural movement of thinking, stream of consciousness kind of thing, that the reader can identify with, that they can read and be like, oh yeah, that's how people think. For a guy to just be like thinking about this and then getting interrupted by that and then, but then thinking about that again later.
And what's the origin of the name?
The origin of the name is I went to college in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and I'm from Chicago, the Chicagoland area. And if you drive to Grand Rapids from Chicago, there is a highway exit with a sign that says Glen Ganges, because there's a Glen, Michigan, and there's a Ganges, Michigan. And so I just took the name from that.
And you've been drawing Glen Ganges since high school.
No, since college.
Since college?
Yeah. And then I remember years ago, an artist with a bit of advice that has always stuck with me, which is an artist does not need to reinvent the wheel every time. And so that taught me to, you know, once I did something, if it wasn't broke, I didn't change it, you know. And so Glenn worked fine for one story, and rather than go through it all and pick another name and design another character, I just stuck with Glenn.
Well, you started out doing autobiographical comics, so I think some people assume Glenn Ganges was based on you, but you were really shooting for, it sounds like, kind of an outlet for some of your philosophical musings, some of your thoughts about everything from scientific, mythical topics. It's, as you said at one point, it's the in-between moments of life.
Yeah, I mean, when I was younger, I tried to plan out a longer story, and it fell apart. I realized that it would just take me years, and then I'd be sort of shackled to this one idea. And I, you know, 8 years from now, I would be still working on illustrating a thing that I thought of 8 years ago. And so I kind of decided to approach comics in a way where I'm only making up a little bit at a time. But at the same time, I didn't want it to just be chaotic. And so I sort of realized I should have this organizing principle or this sort of something I come back to, I repeat. And once I figured out that Glenn would be in bed and unable to sleep, I realized that that would be a good base camp to try different things from, to try different stories, different expeditions, but then always coming back to Glenn in bed. And so it just kind of evolved from there. And then once Glenn in the early stories was reading this book about geology, I thought, well, now I have this geology thing. I can look into that. The science stuff comes from an interest in science textbook illustration. I like science diagrams. A few times I've, you know, found something in research, found something in my reading, and then thought, I'd like to draw comics about this. And in this new book, there's a lot of material about geology and the age of the Earth and geological forces. And it fits into the themes of the book having to do with time. Glenn's awake in bed throughout most of the book and unable to sleep. And his sense of time when in the middle of the night laying in bed is amplified. You know, it's like you can't help but just sit there and in the darkness and the silence and hear the clock ticking kind of thing. And so, but he also had been reading a book about the age of the Earth and hundreds of millions of years and, you know, the erosion of mountains and things like that. And so it became an interesting challenge to, in comics form, to kind of show the subjective passing of time that we're like used to in the moments when we're like just living our life, then the moments when we are hyper-focused, when we feel something special is happening or you have a special state of consciousness and so time feels different. But then also trying to comprehend what millions of years must be like. The activity of a river or water erosion, what that can affect over hundreds of millions of years, not to mention like the development of, you know, organisms and animals and stuff over millions and millions and millions of years. I just picked Glenn Ganges' name off a sign, but then all of a sudden, for the first time in my life, I was thinking about the Ganges River, you know. And so anytime I saw the Ganges River in my life, I would pay attention a little bit. And then I realized, you know, it got me to read, learn a little bit about Indian culture. And so then when I'm reading a book later about geology and there's this extended passage about rivers and how rivers erode mountains over time and that rivers are constantly cutting into their banks and like spreading out over a wide area. And over time, they jump their banks and slither all over the planet. All these things start to become rich things to write about and put into the mix.
And rivers are hugely allegorical. Like
yeah, rivers are super classic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like rivers are super classic as metaphors, as themes, as like almost like godlike forces.
Well, in the case of the world. Hinduism, the Ganges is a sacred being.
Yeah.
And so you have theology, you have Jungian psychology where everything under the surface of the water is the subconscious. And everything above is the conscious.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to get at the idea that, you know, Glenn not being able to sleep was not the original plan. But once it was there in the story, I was like, oh, this is good. I can work with this for a while.
In Glenn Ganges, you have this really interesting way of playing around with the sense of time in the panel form. You have panels that will seem to be going in a linear fashion, but they might be going backwards, they might be going sideways. In some places, you've got the pages kind of turning on their sides, so you can see underneath the surface to these other expressions of time.
Yeah, the first story in the book is called Time Traveling, and that story was sort of about the feeling that you have when you take a walk that you've taken many times before, like I've taken this walk before in this kind of weather before years ago, and in a way, in a moment, it didn't feel like that day anymore. It felt like that walk was its own sort of dimension of time. Anyways, that's what I was trying to get at with the story, the way that the mind is sort of like all of a sudden made aware of time and is trying to think like, oh, how much time has passed between then and now and what happened? And when you draw a comic, you can put in the corner, you put that day or meanwhile or later. So it just became a sort of an interesting thing to play around with the panel border, the little bit of caption that says when it is. And I could have Glenn walk out of the panel into earlier, walk back into the panel into later. So then just that little story was called Time Traveling. And then time suddenly became a topic to play around with in future stories. And then they sort of refer to each other and amplify each other a little bit. For whatever reason, time traveling has always been in my toolkit for making stories. It is one of those mysteries. It feels like sometimes like if you could crack that mystery of time, the world would seem less strange and life would seem less strange.
The abstract characters that you drew, what inspired those?
I think you're talking about like the little characters on the horizon line.
Yeah, they're kind of iconic. They're interacting.
What that is at one point I realized that coming up with an entire story was stressing me out. And so I wanted to come up with sort of a simple comics game. It would be something where I could sit down and just start working on it and improvise it based on a couple of simple rules. And then there could be endless variations. And so I came up with this little game where it was two characters and they fight or they run. That's it.
And it's called Fight or Run, Shadow of the Chopper, is that right?
That's one of the issues of it, yes. Though there's other material in other places. So it's called Fight or Run, you know, fight or flight, the idea of stress causing fight or flight response. So these little characters came from that, but then like I was saying earlier about not reinventing the wheel, then I realized that Wendy was a cartoonist and I could have Wendy draw those comics. So I could draw those comics, but then also whenever I needed to show the comics that Wendy was drawing, I could use those. So I wove it into the book.
Wendy, Glenn's wife, becomes the entry point to that world.
Yes. Yes. So that's where those little characters came from. And part of the idea of why they're so simple and abstract is, again, to sort of constrain my choices and make it something that I could sit down and just play around with without having to worry too much about looking at photo references or that kind of thing.
Yeah, they remind me of animated characters, like maybe European animation.
Yeah, I had a guy approach me years ago about turning it into a video game, but that sort of fell apart.
You're listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Conser, and we're talking today with Kevin Huizinga. He's the author of the graphic novels Gloriana, Curses, and Glenn Ganges in The River at Night. Well, you grew up in a close-knit community in the Midwest.
I grew up in a Dutch immigrant community outside Chicago. Yeah, Dutch Reformed, Dutch Calvinist people. My name, Huizinga, never got Americanized, I think, because we were in a small Dutch milieu where Huizinga was not a strange name. Maybe it would have turned into Houseman or House or something at some point if we had moved to a different area or been more ambitious in a worldly way. So yeah, church twice a week, and I went to Calvin grade school. I went to Calvin college. I went to a Calvinist high school. Read a lot of theology, heard a lot of theology growing up. I think I learned how to sit still, sitting in church, a lot of doodling in church.
You have a really broad knowledge of scripture from growing up, and I can see some of that coming into your comics at points.
Yeah, you know, I thought I was going to go into the ministry, as they say. When I went to college, I was planning on going to seminary. And a lot of my friends in college were people who were in seminary or going to seminary. You're a preacher's kid, right?
I am.
A lot of my friends growing up were preacher's kids or the children of teachers, you know, school teachers, you know, the weirdos.
Calvinism is such an interesting sort of, it's almost like a philosophy, less of a theology, more of a philosophy. Some people think of it as severe, but other people think of it as kind of liberating. You don't have that sense of, oh, I've got to do everything to please God. It's like, God's going to do whatever God's going to do.
That's the idea that everything was predestined was supposed to be a source of comfort. I think you can come through that tradition and you can hear the message that you need to be very afraid. Or you can sort of take the message to be that fear is conquered.
In a way that fits into your musings on time, that everything has a predestined outcome, then time isn't something that can split off in any directions. It's very linear. There's people I know who are fascinated with kind of the sci-fi idea of there's infinite branches that time could go off in. But it seems like you've got people who say, no, time is always going to be just this one linear path, and the outcome is already known. And that seems to be closer to what the Calvinists believe.
Yeah, I think in Calvinism, a lot of the ideas fit together like puzzle pieces where everything is already taken care of and already set. Those ideas arise out of the idea that God is completely in charge of everything and has got everything figured out. I remember reading through it and trying to figure it all out and realizing that what it felt like were some irreducible paradoxes about ideas, irreducible paradoxes about language, and that a lot of the theology is sort of a attempt to lessen cognitive dissonance.
Oh, yeah.
Where the way that you live your life and the way that you think and the books that you read and the old stories that you read, it all fits together as well as it possibly can fit together so that it doesn't all come crumbling down.
In Glen Ganges, in The River at Night, one of the characters you bring in was a theologian from a couple hundred years ago, Irish theologian who estimated the origin of the earth at 4004 BC based on biblical timelines.
Right. The material in the book about geology is sort of specifically about this early stage in geology where the scientists and at the time they were called savants were just for the first time figuring out what the age of the earth was. In a context where the Bible was considered to be reliably historical and that you could glean historical scientific data from the narratives in the Bible, a lot of those guys had to kind of figure out how that worked. You know, there was a lot of discussion back and forth about is the earth not that old or is the earth extremely old? Is it like unfathomably old? And then the geologist in the book, Hutton, who we sort of follow his work in the book, he even kind of implied that the earth was maybe infinitely old, that it was sort of a cycle that just was constantly repeating over and over and over. He had sort of a strange view. He had a view sort of that the natural world was, and this was based on Isaac Newton's discoveries about physics and sort of the cycles of gravity and all that kind of stuff. Hutton's idea was that the earth, like Newton's system, was sort of this like balanced setup of forces that just infinitely recycled itself, you know, inertia and gravity, just kind of like, or this was this clockwork universe. His idea was that the Earth was almost like a machine of geological forces that like created soil and then eroded soil and then created soil. And so as far as he was concerned, there was no beginning or end. But he was still a very pious, religious man. And so he thought that within this sort of like constantly renewing system, God at some point sort of like specially created human beings. And then human history sort of played out within this background of infinite looping. So anyways, that was interesting to try to illustrate in the book. And sort of what I'm trying to get at with the spirals and the symbols of infinity in that section is an attempt to visualize a lot of that.
Yeah, there are a lot of philosophical and theological traditions that really go for that cycling idea. The Vedics, for example, some indigenous people, the idea that the same cycles of history kind of loop around and come back again, spiral around.
Yeah, it's there's a fascinating book by Stephen Jay Gould about discussing that sort of the vision of time as a cycle and the vision of time as an arrow, and how really you can't have one without the other within science. There's a couple things in science that really point to an arrow of time having to do with entropy. And also, it wasn't actually the geologists who studied the forces of the Earth that discovered sort of the timeline and age of the Earth so much as it was the people who studied fossils. Fossils are really the thing that when you look at fossils in the Earth, it's clear that there's a linear progression. If you looked at fossils in the Earth and you found like cycles of fossils, the way that you find cycles of soil, you might think that the Earth actually was an infinite looping cycle, but fossils appear in a linear fashion.
So the sense I'm getting from looking at the book, Glen Ganges and the River at Night, is that you're not so much going for a narrative arc as kind of a thematic arc.
Yeah, it's a different, I guess it's maybe an approach to form where it's not a beginning, middle, and end sort of three-act story. It's more of a theme and variations kind of thing.
Yeah, I see that in the work of like George Harriman, who did Crazy Cat, and Chris Ware, your fellow Chicagoan, you know, coming back to the same themes, but not necessarily one long unbroken narrative.
Yeah, the newspaper strips would be a model where it's like they come up with sort of a concept like it's about a kid who sneezes and everything falls apart, you know? And then that's it. And then you just do variations on that theme. Or, you know, Charlie Brown and the football or the kite-eating tree or whatever. One of those things comes around while you're working and then you're like, oh, this is good. I'll come back to this when I need to come back to something. You know, this goes into the toolkit. Yeah, it's like this Glen Ganges story in this book could have been a newspaper strip that was just, oh, it's the strip about the guy who can't sleep, you know. And I'm just trying to spin out various gags that are related to that setup.
Yeah, you're a huge fan of classic newspaper comics from the early 20th century.
Yeah, I think for the reasons I was just saying, like they're not short stories or novels. They're a different form of storytelling where it's sort of riffing on a topic or riffing on a setup.
And speaking of newspaper comics, you had a newspaper strip of your own for a while that ran in the St. Louis Riverfront Times. It was called Amazing Facts and Beyond with Leon Beyond.
Yeah.
It's co-authored with Dan Zetwalk. What was I mean, obviously it goes
Leon.
Along with your...
And Leon. Leon was also one of the...
Oh, Leon was one of the people. Yeah. Okay. But yeah, that obviously went along with some of your scientific interests, but it was surreal. I mean, it was not reliable information.
You don't think it was?
Oh, okay. Well, I'll have to go back and read it again.
I mean, Leon would send us the facts and the scripts, and we would kind of draw them into little stories.
All right.
I think Dan sometimes would look things up. I tended to not look things up, so I just kind of went with the script I got every week. Yeah, and so we did that for 4 years, and we put out a collection with Uncivilized publisher in Minneapolis. But I haven't heard from Leon in a while.
He's sort of gone into the shadows.
Yeah, he's not, I don't know, kind of lost track, and he's not on social media or anything, so. Mm-hmm.
Well, what's next for you?
Well, various things. I'm going to do some zines. I'm going to make some booklets. And then Fielder number 2. My new series is called Fielder. And I'm going to write more stories about suburban Glenn, as well as stories about dinosaurs, various other things.
So you still like self-publishing and mini comics?
Yeah, it's all right. It's all right. I know how to do it. So I do it. It's pretty fun.
Oh, we've been talking today with Kevin Heisinger. He's the author of the graphic novels Gloriana, Curses, and Glenn Ganges in The River at Night. Kevin, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And for those listeners who'd like to find out more about you and your other books and projects, where can they look?
They could Google my name and everything will come up, I'm sure.
How do you spell it?
It's spelled Huizenga.
You've been listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Conser. Many thanks to all our listeners on the radio dial and at KBOO.FM. You can find an archived version of the show later today at KBOO.FM/Words and Pictures. And be sure to follow us on Twitter @WordsAndPicture.